Janelle, what's up?
Saeed, oh my God.
I know you like that energy.
Oh, we meet again.
No, another episode.
Another great episode. And has it even started yet?
No, it hasn't even started yet. It's about to be dope, though. Two writers.
Talking shit.
Yes.
We've got some incredible reviews.
Come on. Let's go. Okay, well, first off, shout out to Gray Haste.
Number one fan.
Once again, another comment. This is the type of stuff we like. Mm. It's the person who comments more than once. Like, yeah. Don't be shy.
Yeah. Comment on every episode.
You like an episode, say it.
Yeah.
Okay, so he said, another good one, exclamation point. Mm. Honestly, like others, just great hearing from real personalities regarding the biz and varying ways to navigate it. The UCLA program showcase was a new one. Hadn't heard of that one. Thanks, y'all.
Love that.
That was dope.
We've also got a wonderful comment from Crystal Pear, and it says, this episode helped clarify so much information about what a writer can do to prepare themselves for management and what to do in that relationship dynamic. Also, a very funny episode. Thanks. Some of these comments came from the Allard Cantor episode. So if you haven't heard that, go listen to it.
That was a great episode.
That was a great episode. We do have a little bit of news. So our previous guest, celebrity tarot card reader, Angie Banicki, you will remember she did pull cards for Saeed for the very first time.
Yes.
Her own deck is out, so you can order yours at explorerofthesoul.com. And there is literally a card that looks like a baby Saeed.
Wow.
So go order it for that reason alone.
Yeah, I need my publishing. First off, we got somebody that I met on Twitter.
Oh.
Dope writer, creator, writing for an amazing show.
Mm.
Joya McCrory is in the building.
Good.
Listen, first off, writing for a show like Abbott that I want to talk about. Your episode just aired a few weeks ago. Hilarious episode. And it's funny because when you write an episode, you see certain things. I'm like, oh yeah, I know. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, you done put your feet in this one. But before we even get into Abbott, like, what was the script that changed everything for you?
Ooh. I would say it's probably my spec script that I wrote for Schitt's Creek.
Okay.
And that is what got me into the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop.
Okay.
So that was the big one. And also my first spec I ever wrote, period.
What? No way. Let me ask you this. Were you a fan of Schitt's Creek before?
I was, and then over the pandemic, it was kind of my comfort show, so I was watching it all the time, so I figured I would just
put it together.
What happens in your spec?
It is kind of a play on Firefest.
Okay.
So,
oh shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, so I was so obsessed with those Firefest documentaries.
Yeah, so it's pretty much if Firefest came to Schitt's Creek.
The Schittfest. Oh my God.
Okay, yeah. See, now we know why this is the script that changed everything.
Hell
we're
yeah.
Already so in it.
Hell yeah. That also is very smart because I tell people, like, one, you wrote a show you were a fan of, right? And two, you made a great idea, right? Because I think that's part of it too. And that's something that wouldn't be on somebody's desk. So that's dope. Mm-hmm. Also, what made you enter fellowships? Like, was that something you knew, or like, how did you like, what, and how long did you enter?
Yeah.
And please don't say one time. Like, if you say one time
with the first spec script I ever wrote.
If you wrote the first spec, oh my God,
no.
Please tell it.
Well, okay. I applied to the Disney Fellowship in 2019 for the first time. And
okay.
I applied because I knew that was kind of a shortcut to getting a staff position on a writer on a show.
Yeah.
So in 2019, I applied to Disney and I made it to the semifinals.
Okay.
And then in 2020, I applied to WB for the first time and I did get in.
Oh my God.
But that took so many, it took me 10 years total to like get from where I started. So, the fellowships was kind of the last thing that I started to do before I was ready to kind of give up the dream, to be honest.
Oh, so you almost, did you reach a point where you were like, all right, I'm gonna give one more year at this? Or did you ever have those kind of thoughts?
Yeah, summer 2020, when, you know, some stuff was going on in the world.
Just some small things.
But I kind of set a goal to apply to a lot of the fellowships and a lot of contests. And my 10-year anniversary was coming up on September 1st. Okay. And I'm like, if at that time, if nothing happens for me, I have to sit down with myself and have a conversation. Like, do I really need to be in LA anymore? But I think I got a manager on September 1st on my 10-year anniversary, and then I found out I got into the program or the semifinals like the 2 days after that. So
that's crazy.
Wow. Did you work with our friend Ellie Lockman?
I did. I love Ellie.
Love Ellie. Rebecca too. Rebecca Windsor.
Yeah, I owe those two so much.
That's fire. Mm. Being born and raised in Detroit, how has that influenced your voice?
That's a good question. I think Detroiters are known to be tough, and I think pretty straightforward, and I think you can kind of see that in my writing. I'm very sarcastic, so I think some of the lines that you get from Ava often come from me. Yeah, I think just kind of that tough go get 'em attitude is definitely from being a Detroiter.
Yeah. And definitely you need that when you're like, you know, trying to pursue this thing, which is hard to do. Like, you know what I'm saying? I always say it's like, it's almost crazy that I thought I could even do this. Like, you have to be slightly delusional.
Oh, 100% delusional. Full delulu. Now, Joya, what is your writing process?
Ooh,
another good question.
It is a good question. When people ask that, I always wish I had a good answer. I'm one of those people who are not, I don't have a set writing time, and I don't like go sit at my desk. I'm kind of like, when something needs to get done, I scramble and get it done. But I wish I did have a very good process. But if a deadline needs to be hit, I'm just up all night writing, and then I hit it.
Are you a little bit of a procrastinator?
A little bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I am too. If I don't have a deadline, if I just don't have that absolute panic, fear of God, my life is going to be over if I don't get this done, it's very hard for me to write.
Yeah. And it's when I got sent off script for the very first time, we get 5 business days to finish a script. So I was very stressed that I wasn't going to be able to hit that deadline for some reason. But it was actually pretty easy. So I had a lot of faith in myself now that I can write an episode in 1 week and not be too stressed out about it.
Mm. That's fire. Did you take any film or screenwriting classes in college?
No.
Okay.
This
is interesting.
Yeah. I was an English major and I took creative writing courses. Okay. And at one point I wanted to take a screenwriting class, but it was too high up and I wasn't in that major, so they didn't let me. So I didn't study screenwriting until I did the UCLA professional program.
Oh shit, I did that too.
Yeah, and I did the in-person one. So that's why I came out to LA in 2010.
Okay. So you did that in 2010?
Yep.
Oh shit, I did it like 2018, I think. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. That's dope. Do they know? So here's one thing I'm always wondering. Like, do they know that we are doing what we're doing or no? Like, have they reached out to you at all?
No, and I don't mind, but...
Nah, UCLA, you need to reach out. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Seriously, they're not keeping track of their alumnus properly. Okay, so we watched your episode. Mm-hmm. Anyone who hasn't seen Abbott Elementary Season 3, Episode 10, it's called Too Ava Too Fast. It's like a perfect episode of half-hour television.
Right.
And it's been so long, honestly, since I watched a half hour that's like funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like in the fetal position crying. I'm actually laughing watching this half-hour show. It's got everything. It is funny. The jokes are landing. It's heartwarming. There is a celebrity guest star, Questlove. So were you able to go to set for your episode?
Yeah, one of the perks of working on a network show is that we all get to go to set for our episode. So I was in the trenches.
Wow. Oh my God. Did you meet Questlove?
I did.
Oh shit, that's legendary. I love how Questlove was in the episode too. That shit was dope.
Yeah. What would you say is the TV writer's role on set, if any? Just like hang out, be cool, or like
try not to say shit to anybody?
Yeah. Just like wave at people, be like, I wrote this shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think our technical goal is we're there to protect the story.
Okay.
But we also have one of our showrunners who's on the set with us usually, so we don't have to protect it as much. But also Quinta created the show, so she's there pretty much every day.
Ultimate
But we also pitch alternate jokes if needed, or shorter takes if something we're there to add. So, or if something doesn't make sense to an actor, we're there to explain it. Or if they bring up valid points as to why it doesn't make sense, we're there to change it. So it's all such a collaborative effort between everyone on set.
That's dope. Is this, you've been on set before? Or?
Yeah, this is my fourth episode.
Okay. Oh my God. Yeah. Wow.
Because you've been on there since season one?
Yep.
Come on. Like, this is crazy. This is like being a writer for Friends. Like, you just never hear that anymore. Like, I'm on season three of a show that I've been on since season one.
Listen, I mean, yeah. I mean, Flatbush Misdemeanors died. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just like, you know, shout out. But that is the new trend where it's like, you know, you end up getting staffed. Like, I was staffed on season two of Flatbush Misdemeanors. And I'm like, oh, this is gonna be good. I love this show and blah blah blah. And then next thing you know, it's gone. And you're like, damn, like 10 years ago, you would have been able to be on a show like this for a while. So it's like, I think that's super dope for you because you're getting all this experience and just moving up, up, up. You know, not to mention it's a hit show. So that's fire.
Oh, I have a question. Have you ever created a new character on any of your episodes?
Not, I don't think I can say I have. I think
the NBA. She already said she gives a lot of Ava swag though. Like, that's definitely.
I think our room is so collaborative. So yeah. I think anything, we have come up with new characters together in the room. And so we get sent off with a really long outline. So we don't have that much freedom to just throw a random person in there. But
yeah. You talked about being in the WB TV Writing Fellowship Program. Like, how long was the program, and, you know, how many other writers were in it, and what did you learn from that that helped you kind of be in, prepare you for being in the Abbott room?
Yep. It was 6 months and there were 10 of us, three comedy writers and seven drama writers.
Yeah.
And I think truly probably the most important thing that I learned in there was, kind of the outlining and process and, writing story areas, which is something I really never did in my personal projects, but Rebecca and Ellie really forced us to go through every step of the process of writing. So they would make us do it over and over again until we got it right. And at the time I was like hating to do that. And I hated it so much. But by the time I made it to the Abbott room, I had to write my first story area by myself. Mm-hmm. My showrunner was just so happy that I could do it by myself without any help. And I'm like, oh, okay. All that hard work actually paid off eventually.
I agree. I think it's interesting because, like, for me, outlining was hard. Like, when I was in the Nickelodeon program, it was like, that took me the longest because I was writing like a, it's interesting because I was writing like a beat sheet, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, because when you're used to writing stuff for yourself, it's like, you're not writing it for someone else to read. But they used to drill me and be like, this is not an outline. This is not an outline. You have to write in prose. Like, it has to be like a novel. And it was just so hard for me to get it over. But I just like you, once I got it over, by the time I was in the room and they were like, can you write the outline? It was like, oh my God, I don't, like, you know how to, like, you know, like, these are things that they don't necessarily expect, you know, a first time writer to possibly know how to do. And these are skills you do have to learn. Yep. So outline is different. That's dope. And damn, seven drama. That's another thing I was telling people. If I would have known, because I was entering as a comedy writer, I was like, if I would have known there were that many more drama, I might have wrote a drama. Like, you know what I'm saying? I might have wrote like Power or something as a script to get up in there.
Yeah. With your musical background?
I know.
Why not?
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
So was Abbott Elementary, was that your first staffing meeting or did you have others before that one?
No, that was the last one that I had. I had two before that one. So the first one was a show and I kind of made it to like the second round of interviews and then I didn't get it. And I was kind of devastated because I was really ready to leave my day job and start writing. And then my second interview happened the day before Abbott and we were just waiting to hear about that. But then in my interview with Abbott the next day, I got offered the job in my interview.
Shit. Oh, shit. Wow. It's like bim, bam, bop.
That's crazy.
What, can you tell us what the other two shows were?
Sure. I don't think there's any reason that I can't. The first one was the Head of the Class reboot. That was on HBO Max. And then the second show was the Fox show Pivoting.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting how, if you believe in the universe, like it works out the way it needs to work out. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Like I had went up for Charmed. And yeah. didn't get it, and I was let down. You know what I'm saying? I was like, God damn it. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it ended up working out, because then I ended up getting Nickelodeon. But it's like, it's funny how, and that's something for, you know, the upcoming writers listening to this, to like, look, you didn't get the first gig. Like, you know what I'm saying? And you were let down, but it worked out. Like, you know, like mm-hmm. sometimes it's like that, and it worked out better. You know?
Yeah.
A lot better. Mm. How did you prepare? Because it's interesting, because you were there from season one, so you couldn't watch. I mean, I guess you had the pilot, right? But like, how did you prepare for day one of Abbott Elementary Room?
I think I mostly just freaked out.
Hey, that's all right, though.
Yeah, because when I found out who else would be in the room, mm-hmm. I keep telling this story, but it's very true. But there are so many like stand-ups and people mm-hmm. who are famous for being on BuzzFeed. And mm-hmm. I just really started to second guess myself. And I'm mm-hmm. like, how do I tell a joke? I was really like one step away from Googling that. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be funny enough to be in this room with all these people. But I think just to prepare, I watched the pilot, and mm-hmm. I had some story ideas that I could come up with. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just scared to start and see what would happen. And we were on Zoom at first, so that was kind of a weird vibe. Mm-hmm. But everyone in that room was so welcoming and great. So I got over being scared pretty quickly.
That's dope.
So, sorry.
No, go ahead.
When did you move from Zoom room to in person?
We were on Zoom for about a month.
Oh, so that was pretty quick.
Yeah.
And did you find it hard to find your place in the room on Zoom?
Well, I guess the WB program was all on Zoom because we did it in 2020. Mm. So I was a little bit used to it, but I think it can be hard. Like I'm a little more, I don't talk as much as other people in the room. Mm-hmm. So I think I had to, in those first couple of weeks, I had to make a point. Like I must speak at least twice before lunch and at least twice after lunch. And I had to like writing down like, what would I say? And so that was kind of my goal, to make sure I was saying things and participating. So I kind of just, because I think one of the quotes that I learned from my old job is, it's like, if your presence doesn't make an impact, your absence won't make a difference. So that's always something I keep in mind.
I like
that's
that.
Merch.
Put that on a shirt. Mm. But yeah, nah, I agree too. I do think like, I wasn't like the most talkative, like, you know what I'm saying? But like, I would like make sure, like I had a piece of paper where I would be like, all right, man, you got to get two in. Like, you know what I'm saying? And every day I would look at that too. Mm-hmm. And if I got to like after lunch and it's still two, and I'm going to, you know what I mean? But I also, like you, I feel like it's better to like have something additive than just say just anything. Like, you know what I'm saying? And some of the times I might not have had a joke or whatever, because I was in a room filled with comedians too on Flatbush, where it's like more than half of them is stand-ups. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it is kind of intimidating, because you're like, shit, I don't think I'm funny, even though other people thought I was funny. But
I'm funny. We think you're funny.
They did too. But one thing I also did to make add value was research. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, you know, one of the characters had like a jail issue, you know what I'm saying? Like Hassan, who was in there. And I looked up like, what are the statutes of like, if he had got caught with a gun in New York? And then I bring that in the next day. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, this is what would happen. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like there's different ways that you can make yourself valuable to the room. Mm-hmm. So also you said that, so the pilot was already shot.
Yes.
That's dope. So you got to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Oh. Okay. So pre-Abbott, you had your Schitt's Creek spec. What was your half hour sample, your original half hour sample?
It was a comedy called Roomies, just based on a true story of when my roommate in college had a baby, and we all stayed roommates throughout the whole college experience. So it was like, the alternate title at one point was like Two Sluts and a Baby, but
oh my god, that's good.
I like that title. But yeah, you had to change that. It was like, okay, I can't turn that in. No, I feel you though.
Roomies.
Yeah, roomies. That's tight though. Mm. So another thing is like, some of us aren't as, you know, you ended up working on a show that's a hit, right? Mm. How does it feel? And also did you know, like, obviously it was the first time. So did you know when did you know, like, I think this shit is popping? Like, can you answer that?
Yeah, I think I knew personally, because the room wrapped way before it aired, and like it was so much time before it aired, and I was telling people about it, like, oh, the show I'm on, and no one, mm-hmm. I guess I forget people don't follow deadline. And
nah, it was like, what is that?
Yeah, they like had no clue what I was talking about. So it wasn't until it aired, we had like a special premiere at the end of December, mm-hmm. and it aired, and people, like Twitter started talking about it, people mm-hmm. started talking about it, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is actually mm-hmm. gonna be a thing. And I think there was a couple of weeks before it came back on and people are actually anticipating it. I'm like, okay, that's when I realized that we might have something on our hands.
That's tight. Mm. Does your family try to pitch you ideas?
Oh yeah. I get texts from them all the time and it's just like, thanks. I'll keep that in mind. But I'm like,
Wow. Now, at what point did you get your reps? Did you have them pre-Abbott, or where along the process did you get them?
I had my manager before Abbott, and then I got agents after the end of season one.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to meet your manager?
I guess this is a good story. So in 2020, at the time when people were very... concerned about giving Black writers a chance, mm-hmm. I was able to meet with Jennifer Caton Robinson, who is a writer director who wrote and directs Someone Great and the third Thor movie. And so I was able to meet with her. We had a little virtual meet and greet and we kind of hit it off because she loves music and I love music. And we stayed connected and she sent my script out to people she knew. And I didn't even really know she did that. And so like several months later, because I didn't hear anything after that, I just get an email out of the blue from a manager saying like, oh, I have your script and I love it. Can we meet? And I met with her and we kind of hit it off instantly, and I'm like, all right, you can be my manager.
That's tight. Another thing that's interesting is like writers, I always wanted upcoming writers and they're like, how do I get an agent? But I feel like your story is the way. It's like the agents will find you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like you got your agent after that room was like almost over or whatever. It's like they'll find you. Get the manager first. Like, mm-hmm. Can you explain to some writers out there like what the writer relationship with the manager is and why you need one and how influential it is for you?
Yeah, my manager is kind of the babysitter of my career. Yes. She guides my career and like I go to her for notes. We work on my ideas together to see if mm-hmm. they're actually valuable or viable. And then the agents are kind of more of the businessy side of things. Like they also can give notes, but like right now they're renegotiating my contract for season four.
Let's go.
So they're the suits, and the manager's like the cool guy. She's a woman.
She's a cool girl.
Like just helping me out.
That's dope. That's super fire. What are some qualities that you look for? Cause you know, upcoming writers that listen to this, they're all like, I want a manager. You know what I'm saying? Do you have any advice for them as far as like when you meet with a manager, what you should be looking for? What kind of questions did you ask or anything like that? Or is it vibe for you? What was it?
It was vibes for me, which mm-hmm. is not how I usually operate.
That's okay, though. Yeah.
It was just kind of a weird way of, because I had a quote on my board from a book mm-hmm. that it was something we connected to instantly. So mm-hmm. I just kind of like, oh, this seems like the right thing to do. But I think there are a list of questions that you should have. You should have someone who likes your work. I've seen people who just like want to be signed by anyone, but they're rep by people who don't care that much about their work and they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to put you out there if they don't believe in you. So I think that's kind of the first step. And I think managers and agents, they take 10% of your money. Mm-hmm. So if you can get a job without them, like mm-hmm. that's also a perk. But right now I know it's tough. So I think, just look for someone who believes in you. Mm-hmm. Look for someone who is available. I think there are some smaller places that you might overlook, but they can actually, you can actually, if you can talk to your manager every day and you can send them an email and they respond quickly, that's a great sign. I know people who are rep by bigger companies and like they never hear from their manager. So I think it's kind of what you, that's what I want. I have kind of the young and hungry team. So they're always kind of going up to bat for me and putting my name out there versus people who are complacent with like, she works in Abbott, she'll be fine. But like,
right. So you mentioned that you worked in HR previously. So it sounds like you have this full career outside of your writing career. So how did you find the time and the inspiration to get your writing done while you're doing something that's so separate from like chasing your dreams?
I guess I never thought of it as a career, so that probably helped. Yeah, it was my job that I went to from 10 to 7.
10 to 7? That's a long day.
Yeah, y'all people out there saying you can't write, and you got a job from 12 to 4. You're busy.
Yeah, but I think I just had to make the time to, and it was, I loved my job and the people that I worked with, and but they really did, like, after 7, that's my time to do my writing. But truly, 2020 was helpful in that I didn't have anything else to do. So that's when I really was able to write that spec and my you know, submit to all those fellowships. So don't count on having a worldwide pandemic to help you accomplish your goals, but, you know, find the time where you can.
You said you were in LA for like 10 years. So were you trying to, because, you know, there are people out there that listen, like it kind of seems like in your story, like you were here for 10 years and maybe within the last 3 to 4 things have been happening. So like, am I right?
Yeah.
So like, how did you, because you said you had got to the point where it was like, man, like if it don't happen this year, like, but what were you doing before then? Like to keep yourself, you know, inspired, but at the same time, like, because you said you took the UCLA class, how'd you even find out about that?
It seems so long ago. I think I just was Googling, because I was, so I graduated from the University of Michigan and I wanted to be a journalist, but I graduated when the economy crashed, so there wasn't a lot of jobs, period. And so that's kind of when I pivoted to screenwriting, but I also applied to all these colleges to get my MFA in creative writing, and I did not get into any graduate school. So I was looking like, the UCLA one, you only have to have an undergrad. So I'm like, okay, I can do that. And it's not as much money to get an MFA. You know, it's only, you know, a 1-year program. Yeah. So that's kind of how I found that. And I think it was just, I just did so much, so many other things before I ended up as a screenwriter. But I think the downside of having that full-time job where I was working 10 to 7 is that I got very complacent. Like, I can pay my bills now. I can just live life and not have to worry about a lot of stuff. So I just was living life for, you know, not writing for a long time. We're just like kind of, you know, like type a little bit and like, whatever, I got to go do some other stuff. So it wasn't until at that job, someone came up to me like, your 10 year anniversary is coming up. And I was like, oh no.
They did that to me.
Oh, wow.
Like, they're like, you want a cake? I'm like, no.
You're like, I want to see myself out the exit.
The analyst has a key out of here, exit out of this motherfucker.
Yeah, that's when I'm like, oh no, I did not move to LA to work in an HR. So that's when it really started to focus.
I think that's a great story for writers to hear, because a lot of them, you know, you move here and you want to get there, but it's, you know, it doesn't happen fast for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
It doesn't happen fast for most people.
Facts.
Yeah. That's true. And so even the things that Joya was saying before about like how her first spec was like, you know, Schitt's Creek. And then that was what she got into the fellowship with. It was her first time applying for WB. It's like, it's not an overnight success story. It's like there's all of those many years of like trying and stalling and trying and stalling and like having the resilience and the perseverance to like move forward and keep pursuing it that enables her to like find that first time success, right?
Yeah, and then the funny thing is like all that experience, because I do feel like the benefit of like having life experience and not just coming out of school directly trying to write, you ain't live shit. Like the fact that you went live the life and, you know, you're working and you have all these experiences, that I know that along with your Detroit upbringing equals bringing stories to the room, which is the job, really. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, so much of Abbott is about like working at an office type environment. The office is a school, right? So it's like, I'm sure there's many people who go into a writer's room. They've never worked an office job. They've never had a meeting with HR. They don't know what any of those dynamics are. So it's like so valuable to be bringing those real life experiences to the room.
Did you find yourself grabbing shit from your job?
A little bit. I think in season one, like the generational differences between the younger and older teachers. I used to have to sit through so many generational difference workshops.
Here's the generational difference video. Press play.
So, and I think like I used to lead new hire orientation. So I'm like, I know the rules about like dating in the workplace. Like,
so, don't do it.
Yeah. But I don't want the Janine and Gregory fans coming after me. But I'm like,
Speaking of that, in the meeting, because it's something we talk about a lot, like also learning from not getting in one room, because I didn't get in my first showrunner meeting or general meeting for staffing. Do you have any advice for writers out there that like, hey, next week I got a staffing meeting, or, you know, next month, or just any staffing meeting advice? Like, did you bring up any of your life experience in the thing?
A little bit. My meeting with Abbott was, I thought it was the worst one that I had.
I love that though.
And it, because it was with Quinta and then Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher, who are the other two showrunners. And I think it was Quinta's book was about to come out the next few days. So I could see she was tired. She was very, she was typing. I could hear her texting during the meeting. And so I'm just
she's getting her DoorDash order.
She's like, no, I'm listening.
Like, okay, I can hear the bag open.
This is meeting number 90. So I hear you.
So she looked over it immediately. And so I'm just like, oh God. And then the meeting that I had the day before, that showrunner liked to talk a lot. And so she kind of led the conversation. So going into this one, I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna, I'm assuming it's going to be that same dynamic, but it wasn't. So at some point, Quinta was just like, I love how we have to pull the answers out of you. And then I'm just like,
that's hilarious.
Well, I guess it's over.
At that time, you're like, I bombed.
I'm not getting this job. It's only like 20 minutes in, and I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'll try to not do that. And she's like, no, I really do love it. And I don't know her sense of humor at that time, so I'm just like, ooh. And then she's still texting away.
That's so tight, though.
So like, so a couple more minutes in, I mentioned how my dad was a boxer, and she's just like, like we could use that for Mr. Johnson's character. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, like, sure. And she's like, oh, yeah, because we're going to hire you. And then I'm just like,
she told you in the meeting?
Yeah.
I just got chills.
Then I'm just like, what?
I didn't think this was going this way.
She's like, oh, yeah, like as soon as you got in the Zoom, I was texting the guys, Justin and Pat, like, we're going to hire her.
That's fire. That's fire. And I think that's good for people out there to know, because it's like sometimes like you're not the gauge of whether or not the meeting is going well or not. Get out of your own head. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just do your meeting. Do it the best you can. And I think it's dope that you like felt that way, but you still was like, I'm going to be in it. I'm going to be active. I'm going to bring up my dad, the boxer. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's dope.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And also it's like a room needs so many different types of personalities to balance it, right? Especially a comedy room where it's like they're so used to people who are just like pitching jokes, like coming at like the Zoom opens and they're like, well, you know what happened to me today?
Exactly.
I bet that they really like appreciated like your like quiet energy, and like obviously they know that you have the goods. They've read your samples. So
that's crazy to get it in the room. What do you do when you're out of inspiration, unmotivated? How do you recharge a burned out battery for you?
I try to go on vacation if I can.
Okay. Okay. I hear that.
Where are we going on vacation?
Well, I don't know. I did not plan this well for during this hiatus, but maybe next year. Yeah. But I'll read.
Okay.
What do you like to read? I mean, you were an English major.
Yeah. That kind of beats the love of reading out of you.
But, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I do love fiction. I it takes me about 3 years to read a nonfiction book, but I don't know. I just try to like live life and go hang out with my friends and be around people who aren't in the industry and just see what's going on out there, and that kind of usually gives me some inspiration, keeps me sane.
Gotta live your life.
No, I agree. There's something that we like to ask always at the end of our interviews,
which is,
what are three things you're like excited about? One is what you're reading. Obviously, it's not going to be nonfiction. And then two, like, what are you listening to currently, like music wise?
Or a podcast.
Or a podcast. And then, podcast. And then what are you watching right now that you're interested in? So we want to go with the reading. What are you reading right now?
I just started Cersei.
Okay.
Several pages in. So
okay. I just opened
literally
the cover.
Just bought it a minute ago. Yeah. It just came from Amazon.
But I'm excited to get into that. I've heard good things. It comes highly recommended.
Yep.
Listening, I think I have like three songs that's stuck and repeat in my head right now, which is Chapel Roan, Red Wine Supernova, Beyonce, Two Hands to Heaven, and Sabrina Carpenter, Espresso.
Espresso!
Okay. Are you a avid? Do you drink coffee a lot?
The song is, I don't know. No, it's just stuck in your head. Yeah.
You watch TikTok?
Yes.
Yeah.
Has to. Huh?
Yeah.
What are you watching?
I just finished Fallout last night.
Okay. I just started the pilot. That pilot was fire. I'm in.
It's a good show. I'm not familiar with the source material, so I was all in. Yeah.
You weren't an avid video game player, Fallout.
Thought it was a comic book. Yeah. But it was fun. I was entertained, so that's kind of all I asked for.
That's super dope. Well, look, we appreciate you coming on Two Writers Talking Shit. You're a writer that I've, followed on Twitter, and it's dope to see you rise. I can't wait to continue seeing what you do. Is there some place where people can follow you on Twitter, and what is that?
Yeah, on Twitter, I am...
X. It's X, right? Whatever.
No, it's Twitter forever.
It's Twitter forever.
Yeah, on Twitter, you can follow me at Just Joya. On Instagram, I'm Joya313. And I usually lurk on both those social sites.
Facts.
Love that. And everyone, go watch Abbott Elementary. Yes, especially go watch Season 3, Episode 10, To Ava Too Fast.
Yes.
Become even more of a fan of Joya, just like we are here on the pod.
Yeah. So tell them, what can they do?
Please, for the love of God, we beg you.
Yes.
Subscribe to the podcast. Two Writers Talking Shit.
Share the podcast
with your friends, with your enemies. Write us a review. Rate us five stars. Five beautiful stars.
Thank you.
And
if you comment, we will shout you out.
If it's a nice comment.
If it's a nice comment.
Yeah.
We only want nice comments.
Saeed.
Another great episode. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.